Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name is Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Daniel Storey of Football 365 and David Preece, goalkeeper, coach and columnist. No anger, no anguish, no shame, no scapegoats. For England, this is not the end, but the end of the beginning. They've not got a monopoly on youth, but they'll be in a better place come the next World Cup cycle. Now, Dan, as you wrote, defeat, but not defeatism. Does that sum it up?
Yeah, I think it does. I think we have to put World Cup 2018 in the context of other major tournaments and recent major tournaments. England are coming off the back of probably their two most disappointing tournament displays. World Cup 2014, their worst ever World Cup performance. Year 2016, losing to Iceland. And the apathy amongst supporters following those tournaments was as low as I think it's probably ever been. So to recapture the supporters, to reach a World Cup semi-final, to win a penalty shootout, to hammer weak teams that we've never done before, and to have faith in the process and where this is going is hugely positive. Mm.
So the biggest achievement is respect and maybe relevance, but presumably the biggest disappointment, David, is, you know, the proximity of the biggest prize of the lot.
Yeah. You can have sort of both emotions. You can be disappointed that we didn't get to the final because of the path that we had there. We'd be hard pushed if we're going to get another path as easy as that. But also, then you can still feel a lot of pride in what they've done. And like Dan said, you know, comparing it to sort of 66 or 1990, okay, it mightn't seem a huge achievement. But coming from where we have 2 years ago, it's been a huge, huge improvement. And not just that, it's given us hope for the future. I know sometimes we can look too far ahead and think, oh well, we're planning for the next World Cup or the next Euros. But it was great to just be able to see what's happening now and enjoy it. And we have enjoyed it.
Mm. Will the chance like this ever come again? Because if you look around at the moment, you've got teams who are in an immediate form of transition. You know, the Argentinas of this world.
Yeah.
Italy, Netherlands didn't get to the World Cup. Where are England in that sort of grand scheme of things?
To me, this tournament has reinforced the principle that England are a second-tier team. I think we started the tournament as a third-tier team, and I think we've become a second-tier team. I don't think we're on that highest level yet. I don't think we are yet a regular semi-final participant. But we have to remember that if France are in transition with young players coming through and might win the tournament, if the countries you mentioned are also in transition, so are England. If you look at our youth performance in 2017, the Under-20 World Cup, the Under-19 European Championships, the Under-17 European Championships, we've performed at every level, so we have to be confident that if we get the processes and pathways right, we can maximise that.
Mm. Let's drill down into that development pathway, David. I think we're all aware that one of the great failings of the England team is a lack of creativity in midfield. So if we look at someone like Phil Foden, who might come through at Manchester City, he's the one they seem to be banking on. You look at Jadon Sancho, who's got something about him and is doing well at Dortmund, and maybe even a completely left field candidate like Jack Grealish. He gets a big move to say Tottenham, he develops. Are those the sort of players we're looking for?
Yeah, definitely. You can put Ademola Lookman in there as well. But the most important thing is they get minutes now. They're not just lost, or they're not set back again by not having first team football. So from the FA's point of view, they need to be pushing those players and getting in their ear and saying, look, you know, you might be enjoying your club, you might have a future at that club, but right now you need to progress and make a progression into where we want to be in 2 years' time. So if you do this, you'll be involved and you'll have a great chance of playing, because this is how we see it going. And rather than just wait and see what happens and let them, you know, develop at their own pace, they've got to be pushed now.
I think the one, probably the biggest win from this tournament is that when the next England squad gets announced in September, October, young players want to be in that squad now. The prioritisation of club over country may never change because of the money involved, but there is a pride now in getting into that England squad. And that will, as Dave says, that will hopefully drive those young players to get minutes.
But it's not just about them wanting to be in there. Of course, all young players have wanted to be in there, but there's been a sort of, they've been blocked by the same names being in there regardless of form. They're just on they're on their reputations. That won't happen now. You can see what happened. If somebody deserves to be in there and they can fit inside or improve on what's gone before, then they'll be put straight in there. And then it's up to the person they replace to get back into the squad again.
Yeah, let's look at maybe the two wide, maybe wing backs. Alexander Trent Arnold. He will be a Liverpool regular, it seems. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It looks like Nathaniel Clyne, through circumstance, has lost his place. You've got Ryan Sessegnon at Fulham, who will benefit from a full season in the Premier League. Are those two players ones you'd expect to actually cement their place quite quickly?
Yeah, and I think importantly for Gareth Southgate, and at club level as well, they're both multifunctional footballers. Sessegnon started as a left-back, but has played as a kind of left-sided forward for Fulham, and we can also pretty obviously see playing as a wing-back. Trent Alexander-Arnold has played centre-back, right-back, right-wing-back, central midfield. So Gareth Southgate has spoke many times before and in the build-up of this tournament about him enjoying and liking and appreciating multifunctional footballers, players that are good in a squad because they can do different jobs and they can put improve competition for places on different players. That can only help them at club level to get more minutes. I think both will be regular Premier League players this season. If that's the case, they'll be knocking on the door of the England squad straight away.
Mm. Anyone else that you think might come in? You know, I've looked at someone like Mason Mount, who's done brilliantly in Holland for Chelsea, but he's in that Chelsea void at the moment. Where does he go to get meaningful time?
I think what Gareth Southgate has done brilliantly since he came into the job, he's looked at the team and said, how can we get each player to function to the best of their ability? So he started as Harry Kane, and you know, he was very isolated in the last championship, so he got players around him that would work beyond him and support him as well. Raheem Sterling in a role, trying to get him in positions that he's used to getting the ball in, you know, whether it's finishing or being able to create something for Manchester City. The problem they have now at the moment that we've seen in this World Cup is that there's something missing in that midfield area. You know, the system that they played is, you know, we can get overrun by opposition if they take advantage of that, if they have a good midfield.
Jordan Henderson against Croatia is an example.
Yeah, of course. And then you've mentioned Trent Alexander-Arnold there. He's already played midfield for Liverpool. I think a lot of people see him in the future playing that position as well. So again, we've got a wealth of talent. I think it's sort of in wide areas. You know, you could even have Kyle Walker, Trippier, Alexander-Arnold. Joe Gomez can come into that as well on that right-hand side. Left-hand side, there's lots on the other side. So it's about, you know, fitting them into the position, so it helps the side. And like I said, Southgate will look at that, and that will be his main focus, I think, at the moment.
Even if that precipitates a change of system, we've seen that Southgate used four at the back during qualifying and then changed that up in preparation for this tournament. Don't be surprised if this 3-5-2 suddenly becomes a 3-4-3 or even goes back to four at the back. He's shown his willingness to be flexible, and that can only help when you're playing different teams, because one thing England have been traditionally poor at, and I think we're probably poor against Croatia as well, is changing things up, changing the mood, changing the gear mid-game. We quite easily get pigeonholed into a way of playing and then find it very difficult to move out of that. And that's something that he will have to learn from this World Cup.
That's not easy to do either. You know, when you haven't got players day to day over a period of months, it's difficult to instill different styles of playing into those players so they can switch at the drop of a hat. and he's been able to do that, and that's a great plus for him.
Yeah, but also, you know, the essential frustration of the England job is that you're beholden to club managers. Mm. So, for instance, if for some reason Jurgen Klopp didn't take a fancy to Gomez, well, you know, we all know he does like him, but he has to rely on Klopp almost trusting his job in young English players.
Yeah, but they have a great relationship with their clubs now. Mm. Gavis tried to do that because, you know, he's benefited from the management styles of Pep Guardiola and Pochettino. It would make up a lot of his side from those clubs. And so he knows that if he can get the best out of them from the clubs where they're playing very well, then he has to do that as well.
Mm. Just if I got you on goalkeepers for a second, and we're looking at potentially people breaking into the squad, Angus Gunn is another one who's going to get regular Premier League football at Southampton, £10 million from Manchester City, after a good loan spell last season at Norwich. Would you expect him to put pressure on the three who are there now?
Yeah, as long as he's playing well. I think it's, you know, at Burnley you've got obviously Tom Heaton and Nick Pope. That's going to be a huge battle this summer. The pre-season games are going to have a lot of, a lot of meaning for the both of them, because it could stunt Nick's progress. I'm sure Tom Heaton will want to play as well, so there might even be movement there, you know, with regards to, if Sean Dyche wants to pick Nick Pope, then Tom maybe have to go somewhere else to play his football. So it's just, people were talking about before the tournament about goalkeepers, and we haven't got a real number one, but it wasn't a weakness though, you know. We've got strength in depth now, and Angus is one of them where he's making the next step up. He obviously played at Norwich last season, and this is the next step for him. It's a great test, and I think, you know, talking about what's come out of this tournament, one thing that's come out of this tournament is that Jordan Pickford is a big game player, and he's answered a lot of critics, he's answered a lot of doubters, and I think throughout the side people have done that, but particularly with him.
Mm. Someone who's answered the doubters probably better than almost anyone else is Gareth Southgate himself. Mm-hmm. We're quite rightly looking at and lauding his decency.
Yep.
What about his acumen tactically? What does he need to do? What more could he have done in Russia, do you think?
I'm not sure about in Russia. I think he pretty much got everything right until the last probably 60, 70 minutes of the game against Croatia, the defeat. To my mind, as soon as England had wasted those first half chances, it seemed pretty obvious that Croatia would be given a rocket at half time and would come out with more control, and that's exactly what they did. But England did play a part in their own downfall. They did sit deep, which is incredibly hard not to do when you're a young side and this is a stage you've never been on before. But as soon as that equaliser went in, there was no change-up of system. We brought off Sterling for Rashford and effectively told Rashford to play the same role. We brought off Henderson for Dyer and effectively told Dyer to play the same role. There was never actually a change of shape. And I do wonder if Southgate had his time again, maybe he would bring off Ali for Loftus-Cheek or Delph to bring some more control, or maybe even bring on a different player instead of Rashford to just try and link the midfield and attack a bit more, because they were getting very isolated. But I should say, to be positive, we are talking about fine margins in a World Cup semi-final, which we never really thought we'd be doing. So broadly positive on Southgate. But he has things to learn, and he would have admitted that going into the tournament, I think.
Mm. As a player, do you respond better to an emotionally intelligent, almost touchy-feely manager like a Southgate, or a bit of a martinet who, you know, believes in what they call creative tension?
I think when you get to that level, there's very few players need kicks up the backside week in, week out. And we see it often now that it loses effect after a while. You know, you have to save it for once or twice a season if you're a club manager. It's international level. It's so much more important to get people on side, and you know, it's probably more important to create a better environment for them to play in together rather than systems or you know, like I said, you know, getting one-to-one motivation out of somebody. So if you can create that group environment, which he has done, that people enjoy being in, and there's no friction anywhere, and that was his biggest plus, that he, you know, he created that environment. He said about he wanted good tourists, and that played a huge part in what they did in Russia.
Mm, yeah, character's a great thing, isn't it? Yeah. Let's look at some of the plus points, and there are many of them. Mm-hmm. You know, perhaps principally Kieran Trippier, you know, the Barry Beckham after that free kick. He again has proved a lot of people wrong. Will he establish himself at club level and kick on this season, do you think?
I think Gareth Southgate has certainly shown Mauricio Pochettino perhaps something he didn't know about Kieran Trippier. I think we all saw him as a jobbing is very harsh, but a regulation wing-back, someone that's very comfortable going forward and can do a decent job defensively. I think in this tournament he probably did only do a decent job defensively. I think the back three were... Kyle Walker covered for him brilliantly, which was the idea. But going forward, he's been a revelation. Some of his crossing has been sensational. And against Croatia, there was a volleyed cross where the ball came over to him. And the technique was absolutely superb. Mm. He's not scored a goal for 2.5 years. And that free kick, as you say, looked Beckham-esque. It was so assured. So I think maybe less in terms of ability, but certainly in terms of big game performance, we've seen something we didn't realise about Kieran Trippier. Mm.
How much of a nightmare is it for a goalkeeper, David, when you get crosses of that quality coming in consistently into your box? Yeah. Does it play in your mind?
Yeah, of course. And I think especially the quality he's got, he's not really putting it in as a target for somebody. He's putting it in an area. And the best quality he's got is that, he said before, that he models his game on Beckham. He doesn't need that. He doesn't need to beat a man. He doesn't need much space to put the ball in. He just needs that defender in front of him to give him a guide, just to put the ball around him. And the shape that he puts on the ball, puts it in the area that's just so inviting for strikers, and a nightmare for, especially not just for goalkeepers, but for defenders. Because if they're going back towards their own goal, it's a nightmare that they might just get a touch on it and score an own goal.
Mm. Only 6 shots on goal from open play in 600 minutes, I think the stat is. What does that say about England, and what does that say about what they need to do that they haven't been doing?
I think going into this tournament, we appreciated that we were lacking midfield creativity. Harry Kane doesn't have a Christian Eriksen at England level, therefore he had to change his game. And he did it, I think, in a very selfless way, dropping deep, linking play, letting Sterling and Ali and Lingard run beyond him. It would be brilliant to find a midfield creator that meant Kane could play his Tottenham role, but I don't see one of those fitting, probably not in the next 2 years, because it takes a lot of work. So England have to either stick with the plan they've got and hope that players are at their best, and I don't think Dele Alli has been at his best in this tournament for one, or they have to hit on a system that gets players even closer to Kane, because last night, Southgate stuck with 2 up front, but which seems attacking, but actually, if you're not servicing either of them, and in the end, it was just Jordan Henderson playing kind of speculative long balls and hoping for the best, and that's not the way to service Harry Kane, unfortunately. So yeah, we do need more midfield creativity, but it's not a thing you can force. You can't fake it. You have to find the right option, and we just have to hope one comes through.
Yeah, tournament football is all about sustaining yourself, isn't it? Physically and mentally. Did Ali and Kane look fit to you?
I think it's always difficult to judge Dele Alli because of the way that he plays the game. I think he very often. I mean, there's been a lot of Spurs games last season. You see him, Eriksen, Kane. They're not involved in the game a lot of the time. So in an attacking sense, you know, they're not sort of all action players where they're on the ball all the time. Dele Alli's the same. You see him in fits and starts, and when he does get the ball, you know, invariably he creates something or he's a danger. In the earlier games, he didn't look fit at all. Of course, he didn't. And Harry Kane, I don't know.
I think that injury, that was, think they sold it as cramp against Colombia late on in the last 16. I think it was probably more than that.
He looked in quite a bit of distress at that time.
Yeah, and I think at that point, it was never really mentioned, perhaps deliberately after the kind of the furore of the team leak. Maybe deliberately everyone took a back step and just let Kane get on with it. But since then, I don't think he looked quite at it. That may be the role he was playing in the team, but even last night, he was just a little bit laboured when he got on the ball and obviously missed two chances, which were given offside, but I think would have gone to VAR and would have been goals if he'd have scored them.
Yeah, and chances like that, it was great for me to see that a lot of the build-up play, we were getting central around the box and his movement was very subtle, just dropping off shoulders, and he got in a couple of times, especially with that chance. And it was that was what's different about our game to me, that before, in previous tournaments, international teams, we've got to the edge of the box and we kind of run out of ideas, so then we go wide and just throw it in the box. When there was a little bit more patience from likes of Lingard and Ali and Sterling, they were looking for those little balls, and I just think that's where the progress has been made. And it was, if we just scored that chance, you know, it would have had a total different complexion of the game.
If that chance goes in, we're not talking about Southgate's deficiencies on substitutions or maybe slight flaws in the system.
If two letters, very big word, very big word. Let's look at Sterling, since you mentioned him, David. You know, he played in that advanced role, creating space and confusion, but he still hasn't scored. How long is it? How long can we wait for him to actually score the goals that everything else justifies?
Until it's a problem, until we aren't scoring goals, until we aren't winning games, until he isn't getting in those positions and missing chances. Before then and up till now, he's doing a job for the side. The side's winning, the side's scoring goals. He's a menace to opposition. You know, it's like, you know, we're probably going to talk about Mbappe, but before he gets the ball, Mbappe is a problem for defenders because they're already wondering what they're going through their head. What shall I do here? Do I need to go tight? Do I need to drop off? And he holds a similar problem for his opponents. And Sweden were terrified of him. And I think that, like I said, until it's a problem for the team and for England, then we start worrying about it.
Let's look a bit further back in the team, that three-man defence. And we'll take, at the moment, as read, that he might stay with that system. John Stones, he seems to have come of age in this tournament. And there were times within that tournament that he almost was playing a bit like an orthodox centre-half rather than, you know, the flowery, let's play it out, by the way, I'm Franz Beckenbauer. Has he been one of the principal assets?
Yeah, I was looking earlier at the England squad, and of the 12 goalkeepers and defenders England have in this squad, Stones is the second youngest, which shouldn't surprise me, but it did. Trent Alexander-Arnold, the only one younger than him. It's very easy to forget just how young and a central defender he is. And he has come on hugely in this tournament, I think. There were doubts about him when he was struggling to get the Manchester City team last season at parts of it, but those doubts have now gone. I think there's a sense with Stones that he needs to be noticed to be renowned or favoured. He's a kind of, we want him to be an all-action defender, marauding out from the back, and because we're so used to the John Terry-type defenders. But actually, Stones is at his best when he's quiet and when you don't notice him and when he's just doing the simple things really well and the team isn't conceding chances. And yeah, I think he's been magnificent. People notice Harry Maguire because he's the action defender, but Stones has been as good, if not better.
What does Maguire need to do to improve, do you think?
Do you know what? I mean, it took me a long time to warm to him. I watched him a lot at Sheffield United, and I think I was just taken in by the way that he looks physically. He was always looked like he was carrying a little bit of weight. He looked a little bit cumbersome. And then a couple of years ago, I saw him play at West Ham for Hull. I think he came on after about half an hour, and he came on at centre-half, then he moved to right-back, and then he played up front. And even when he played up front, he looked great. They were playing balls into him, and he was so composed. And I think, see, to improve, I wouldn't say there's one thing he needs to improve, but I just think he gives the team so much more. And when he's coming forward with the ball, there's no fear there, and it's got a purpose. He's not just running blind with the ball. And I think he's been a real find.
Now, bizarrely, they've still got a game to play, the third place playoff against Belgium, which to me has always been, you know, the complete non-entity of a football match. Given they've got to fulfil the fixture and it might be worth an extra couple of million quid if they win it, does Southgate say, and we'll have Belgium Mark II, and he'll just basically play the reserves.
Yeah, I think he probably will. I think any player who is viewed to be slightly struggling for fitness, so Ali and Kane particularly, I don't think will play. Any player who has not yet started a match, I think will probably play. So, yeah, I think he will make a huge amount of changes. I think he will give minutes to the likes of Alexander-Arnold. What would be interesting is if Southgate tried to change system a little bit or play players maybe slightly out of position than they normally would, because this is a non-entity and it's a nonsense, the game. I don't know why they play it. But it's also a free roll of the dice. It's a good chance to go, do you know what? Let's see what you like in an England shirt. Because if you pick Trent Alexander-Arnold against Belgium, he will be trying his best because he knows that there's qualifiers and UEFA Nation League games down the road. So, yeah, it would be interesting to see if he changes things around a bit, but, yeah, not full strength.
I just hope he looks back at the Belgian game from the group stages and says, well, what did we do wrong in that game? What can I change in this? Mm. Almost see it as a second leg and see if we can turn it around.
Would you change the goalie?
Yeah, I would, yeah. And that's simply just to give experience and reward somebody like Jack Butland for what he's done. And he, I think it's a lot. Jordan has come a long way in a short space of time. Jordan Pickford, I think, will have taken a lot out of him. Especially, I mean, last night. I'm just so proud of the likes of him and Jordan Henderson, because a couple of lads from Sunderland, and then they're in the World Cup semi-final, and just see him. He looks like he should be there. Do you know what I mean? I mean, even give him, you know, when he slid him with Mandzukic, and he's given him a little bit in the floor. And I know it wasn't to some people's liking, but I love that. You know, he's there with world-class strikers, and he's standing up to them. Yeah. And I love that.
Yeah. I'd like to sort of interject with a few questions from the listeners and the viewers. Mark Sanderson, I've loved the tournament, Southgate 2, and while the team has been great, he won't be scared to blood new players in the Euro qualifiers. There are no sacred cows with Gareth. That's very refreshing, right?
Absolutely. I suspect Danny Welbeck might not see another England squad. I suspect Ashley Young might even not see another England squad at 33 now. The likes of Adam Lallana, who needs to get fit. Jack Wilshere wasn't in this squad. Yeah, he's made the England team a meritocracy, which it wasn't for a long, long time. But more importantly, it gives the younger players coming through incentive to impress in every minute at club level, because the way the game is now, Southgate won't miss a minute of action. He might be watching one team on a Saturday, but he will watch everything. So everyone now has a reason to impress, which is great.
Mm. Retirement as a player is obviously the most difficult decision. But if you're someone like Ashley Young, you might see the writing on the wall, and it's quite good to actually go out at the top, as it were. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so as well. You'll probably see that, and I think, especially when you've got the people behind you, that he has, the likes of Sessegnon and Danny Rose. And I think he'll see that. He's kind of, this has been his sort of, his second wind. It was kind of, you know, it's been a bit of a bonus for him, and to go out on top now would be, I think it'd be more fitting for him.
Cahill's probably the other one as well, who was a bit of a surprise name for this tournament anyway. Didn't play in the friendlies in March, didn't start in the friendlies in November. Came in, I think, as a bit of a Joe Hart replacement for experience, but Hart has only played against the Belgium game, so I think he's probably another one who'll think that's probably enough now.
Yeah. Another Hart, Nick Hart. Were we the World Cup's Tottenham? A decent side with flaws, but not quite top table.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. I mean, I wouldn't. I know people's perception of Tottenham is that they're, you know, bottlers and that they throw things away, but we've got more at this tournament that's we're probably talent justified, you know, and the squad justified. And I'd go along with that. And in the same way that Spurs, there's still room for improvement with Spurs, and with more experience, you wouldn't bet against them winning something. So, yeah, I hope it's the same for England.
Mm. Gooner boy, if England had gone all the way in this World Cup and won it, would it have diminished the notion that the lack of a winter break in the Premier League is the main reason for not doing well in big tournaments?
I don't even think we need the if clause at the start. I think it already has done that. There are reasons to bring in a winter break outside of the performance of the England national team, namely the suspicion, I think probably accurate suspicion, that the quality of the Premier League drops off slightly in February and March because players are tired. But I don't think in terms of the national team that this has shown anything. Germany have been proponents of the winter break for a long time and have failed in this tournament. We have not had one this summer and we've done all right. So, yeah, I think that already is a bit of a nonsense. But I don't disagree with the winter break, I should say. The way they've done it, they've staggered it. So there's no huge gap from football. I think it's fine.
But that squad, that England squad, is going to be shattered. If we're expecting them to turn up to play in the Premier League in, what, 3 or 4 weeks, that can't work, surely, can it?
I think we've got the Community Shield 3 weeks' time. And you're right, they are going to be shattered. But this thing with the winter break, because I'm a little bit torn with that. I think it's a good idea. And I'd rather we just got rid of, you know, a glut of games over the festive period, because once that happens, if there's players playing all those minutes, then they're in a sort of like a deficit fitness-wise, and then they're always playing catch-up. But then we'll have the winter break, and then teams won't want to be going back into the Premier League cold, so they will be playing games. There's no doubt about it. They will be, you know, whether it's in warm weather, training weather, they'll go and play friendly games. And, OK, they'll be a little bit more low-key, they won't be putting as much effort into it, but they'll still be playing, you know, 90 minutes and keeping their fitness up.
Mm-hmm. A final one from Craig Griffiths. As this team was forged in the Football League, what does the panel think should be done to ensure young players aren't hoarded by the Premier League clubs and that the lower league clubs can get proper financial reward for developing those players?
Yeah, I think there's two questions there. The first thing is that there's no way to persuade Premier League clubs not to hoard players. If they're allowed to do so, and they are allowed to do so, nothing will stop them doing that. It's in their interest too. We know that because Manchester City, an example, and I don't think they're the biggest hoarder of players, but they can have Angus Gunn for a number of years and then sell him for 10 million without ever having played for them. Nothing will stop them doing that. I think the responsibility has to lie with the players now and the people advising the players. There will be players who think, I could break my leg in training next week, so why shouldn't I get a £1 million signing on fee at a big club and get some good wages? And I fully understand that. But there will also be more players now, I hope, who look at this tournament and think, I want to be part of that. And in order to be part of that, I can see that players have started at Aldershot and Bury and Darlington and Burton, etc. So I'm going to do the same. It was really interesting to hear Pickford talking about, why would I be under pressure in a World Cup semi-final when I've been screamed at by fans in Accrington? And that's exactly right. It teaches you so much.
It's the pathway that the players want to choose now. Speaking of Dean Henderson, under-21's keeper, you know, he's just desperate to get out and play. That's all he wants to do. You know, he's at Manchester United, but he realises, OK, I'm not going to play ahead of De Gea, so I want to play games. And they realise how important it is. It's great when you're at a big club. You don't ever want to move away from that big club, especially if you've been a fan or you've been there for years. You want to play for that first team, but you know, you've got to realise that you can't get there unless you're playing games, and it's so important.
Same with another young goalkeeper, isn't it? Freddie Woodman at Newcastle. He's got to get out.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about Angus Gunn, and in my eyes, he should have been out doing this a long time ago. You know, a few years before, he should have been in League Two and League One, you know, making those gradual incremental steps. And luckily it's worked out for him, but I said he could have had another 100 games under his belt.
Let's look forward to the final. It strikes me that France have been the biggest winner on successive nights. You know, they're going to be facing a Croatian team, average age around about, 29, having gone through three successive extra times, and France have had an extra day to prepare.
Yeah, I think France will be comfortable favourites anyway, but even more so now. What Croatia lack in quality or energy to France, they don't lack in fight. You know, there's no coincidence they've come back in from a goal down in those three games and they've won every game after extra time or penalties. They are fighters and they will go through exactly the same again against France. And the only doubt about France is the year 2016 final, because they, you know, we talk about bottling it. That was the best team in that game by a long way, the best team in that tournament by a long way, and they did bottle it. Other than that, France should be comfortable winners. They've got their far, far outweigh Croatia on quality. And the way Sterling was able to pull a defender out, Kylian Mbappe is the superstar version of Sterling at the moment. He will do that even more.
Mbappe, the face of this World Cup. Now, you know, that back heel that he did, which was, you know, sex on legs, basically, wasn't it? Brilliant. Is that almost as iconic in this era as the Cruyff term was in his?
Yeah. I don't know if you'll ever get more iconic than that, but, I mean, it's... he's shown a lot more to his game as well. You know, some of he's been playing at wide, some of these his passing in the build-up play has been exceptional. You know, he's shown vision and awareness, because when the balls come into him, you know, I was talking about defenders not knowing what to do. He's almost got, you can almost see out of his ear, because he can see them coming towards him. He knows exactly what he's going to do with the ball, and he's not just all about explosive pace, but I mean, he's got it in abundance. Why wouldn't he use it, you know?
The thing I've noticed that I didn't really know about Mbappe before this tournament is he's prepared to have go toe-to-toe with the player as well. He's got some needle to him. One of the themes of this tournament has been the biggest players in Neymar, who is sold as the kind of star of this tournament, you know, the rolling around and the play-acting. Mbappe does a bit of that, but he also, you know, stands up and fights for himself as well. For a winger and for a wide player, there's an awful lot of brawn to him as well.
For players with his pace, especially at that level, sometimes it's too simplistic for them just to push the ball past the defender and go by them. They want to do something in a little bit more that gets him into trouble. He's not bothered about that. He can be really direct when he wants to be. It's brilliant.
Then he can rip any team apart.
Can't yeah.
Oh, yeah, on absolutely. His
own. Yeah. Pogba. He's finally doing a bit of the dirty work, it seems to me. Is that because he's actually found a manager in Deschamps who actually trusts him?
I don't know about that. I hope what's happened with Paul Pogba is that he's understood he disappointed last season. And he's decided he wants to take the World Cup and use that as a point to impress. I think having Blaise Matuidi on the opposite side is hugely helpful, because he's a kind of quasi left-sided player, quasi-centre midfielder, and he drags a player out. And also having N'Golo Kanté, the perfect defensive screen behind him, helps. But I think I said on this podcast before, the thing that's impressed me about Pogba is he's not tried to do everything. Mm. He's done things simply, and when he does things simply, he does them incredibly well. Mm. And suddenly, like with a Toni Kroos or a Luka Modric, suddenly you realise just how good a player is when they're doing simple things well than if they're trying to do everything. And I think sometimes at club level, Pogba is too desperate to impress, whereas he doesn't feel the need to do that at France.
Mm. Goalkeepers are rarely short of an opinion, David, yeah, which is great as far as you're concerned, I'm sure. Courtois, talking about France being just an anti-football team. Discuss.
Yeah, I suppose a little bit of sour grapes as well, you know, but it's... When managers, you know, who like to play football, come out and say that teams haven't gone toe-to-toe with them. Well, why would they? You know, you've got to play the game tactically. You can't just... It's not a too heavyweight going out and slugging it out and see who the best team wins or who's lucky enough to win. There's got to be a bit of know-how, a bit of nous about it. A couple of things that's come out. I know that he clarified his comments about Jordan Pickford as well, but he's just... I like him this tournament because he's matured. He's stood up to be counted, and his performances have backed up his confidence. But then I just don't think there's any need for any of these comments, really. He can be disappointed. He's obviously disappointed, but...
Surprised me a little bit as well. I didn't really think that was him.
No, and it's not, but I think it's just he's becoming a man now. Even though he's, I mean, what, 6'6", whatever, like, you know, and he's looked a man for a long time. He isn't. He's been a boy in goal, shown great maturity, and now he's, you know, he's maybe grown into himself a little bit, and he's thinking, well, you know, I don't need to watch my tongue as much.
Mm, do you think he might end up in the whole Real Madrid Barcelona access?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Regardless of what happens at Chelsea this summer, I think that's been the major driving force behind his whole attitude, and not just attitude, his performance as well. And you have to say that. Wait and see what happens in the final with Hugo Lloris, who's probably in control for getting the Golden Glove so far. I think Courtois could definitely be up there as well.
Mm, yeah, mentioning Lloris, he was saying that he believes that France are a complete team. That overstating it a bit?
Not on the evidence of the semi-final, I don't think. I think they've got a front... You break their team up into sections. You've got a front three with Antoine Griezmann and Mbappe, facilitated by Giroud, which is... probably as good as Brazil's front three, which I thought was the best going to this tournament. You've got a midfield three of Matuidi, Kante and Pogba, which is by far the best, and I think Croatia's probably the only one that rivals them there. And then you've got Umtiti and Varane, who, again, I thought Uruguay were the best defensive team in this tournament, but watching that second half of the semi-final, that was as good as I've seen as well. Mm. And then the only player who I doubted going into this tournament, because I didn't know much about him, was Benjamin Pavard, who's probably rivaled Trippier for the best fullback in the tournament. So, there really aren't many weaknesses there whatsoever.
Mm. Kante's amazing, isn't he? He's like a replicant. You know, if you look at him, in a couple of years, he's won a couple of Premier League titles, you know, always around the voting for Footballer of the Year. Again, are we looking at him maybe as another transfer target? Chelsea have got an issue here, haven't they? Mm. Because, you know, they're not going to be slow in coming forward for Hazard as well. But if we look at specifically Kante, he would absolutely make any team tick, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and there's plenty of teams out there who could afford to shell out for him as well. And in successful sides that French have had in the past, you know, we talk about Deschamps as a player as well. You know, he was famously called the water carrier. So why can't I call him a water carrier? Mm. But people need water. You know, people can't function without him. Giroud's kind of become that sort of figure for the team, whereas Kante has just become... He's immense for them. You know, I was writing about him before, and that's the only word I could come up with was immense, because he's far more than just somebody who rats and closes down and wins the ball back for people. You know, he's great with the ball, and he's so vital to them. And if somebody comes calling, Chelsea aren't really in a position now where they're going to be... challenging for a Champions League final, or on the evidence of last year, not going to be challenging for a title this year. Mm. Now, Kante, maybe he's not that sort of personality and character who's going to be saying, well, I want to be winning things. He's a little bit more humble than that. Mm. But he should be the type of character who expects to be playing at clubs who are winning Champions Leagues and league titles.
Mm. And what about the impact of the movement of Griezmann? You know, I'm given to understand that Barcelona were convinced he was going to sign for them. And they also almost saw him as the natural replacement for Suarez, who's just beginning to go over the hill. With that defence, that Croatian defence, he should get some joy out of it, shouldn't he?
Yeah, he should. He's actually not been quite as on it this tournament as I thought he would be, certainly in terms of goal scoring. At Euro 2016, he was France's attacking threat, and that's kind of shifted slightly to Mbappe with his performance in this tournament. But I mean, he's a hell of a second option to have in terms of running at a defence. And the thing with Griezmann is he seems to constantly remain level-headed. I know there was the nonsense about the staying at Atletico Madrid video, and it was a nonsense. It was foolish of him and badly advised, I think. But since then, he strikes as the ultimate team player. He can occasionally be greedy in terms of taking a few shots, but when France need him and there's a big moment in the attacking third, it doesn't seem to be Giroud or Mbappe there. It always seems to be Griezmann that's in the right place at the right time. And I think he'll score in the final on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Goes without saying, doesn't it, that Croatia need Modric to be at his very best. It struck me that he didn't have any real reason to whinge about a perceived lack of respect from England afterwards. No. Taking all that into account, was that a product of him feeling the need to be the spokesman, not just for the team, but for the country?
Yeah, and kind of, I don't know whether, obviously they are underdogs for the final as well, but it's to create that kind of siege mentality as well. And I don't think our press were that bad. We were optimistic more than anything else. Mm. There was no real... We all knew this was going to be our toughest test of the tournament.
And there was a joke in us about that it's coming home stuff, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was. It was like, it's coming home, but if it doesn't, it doesn't matter that much. You know, there's no recriminations, there's no effigies hanging from lampposts, you know what I mean? It's... Yeah, I think people from the outside... I did an interview with a Danish newspaper a couple of days ago, and they kind of want to know, you know, are you being serious about this? You know, is it arrogance? It's like, well, no, it's just something that's happened and we've ran with it and we've took it on rather than just, it's not expectation, it's just hope and optimism.
Yeah. I had an interesting conversation in the early hours of this morning with a football fellow, an agent who specialises in European football. And we were talking about the reasons for Croatia's mental strength in sport. And the sort of discussions we were having was along the lines of, look, this is a country created by war. Mm. That type of experience, very recent experience, almost creates an innate mental strength. Do you think that comes across in football?
Absolutely, it does, yeah. You don't play three lots of extra time and end up victorious each time without it. I don't think it's a conscious thing. I think it's completely subconscious. It's effectively tricking your mind, tricking you into thinking you've still got physical effort there, when by all intents and purposes, you should be out of physical effort, you should be out of energy. And it also means that when times get tough, you are hardwired as a person to think, well, I've got to make the best of this situation. And in a football sporting sense, making the best of a situation is to, right, pull our socks up, come together and we'll fight and we'll win this game. And of course it doesn't always work, but it's how you become great in the sum of your parts, which is absolutely, you know, even though they have the best midfielder in the world, in my opinion, they are still far greater than the sum of their parts, Croatia.
Mm. Yeah, I spent a little bit of time in Croatia in a place called Novigrad, and there's an absolute wealth of talent there. There's so many players playing below, even below their top leagues. They've got so much talent, and like you said, it's they ally that with a little bit of grit. And it's about, you know, as much as we, you know, we talk about the young players in England, it's about having that opportunity and being able to show what they can do. And in some of the Balkan countries, the, you know, the leagues are won as much in the boardroom as they are out on the pitch, you know. So it can be a difficult environment for players if they don't play the game within those within the infrastructure of the clubs. And a lot of them are outspoken players, and you know they don't want to conform to that. So it's difficult for them to progress sometimes. But I tell you what, the talent set, and it's not just the it's not just in football. I watched a lot of handball when I was in Denmark. They've got one of the world's best handball teams, which obviously lends itself to producing good goalkeepers. And they're yeah, it's for a small country. You know, there's lots of other countries around us at the moment who could take a leaf out of their book as well.
Mm. Just a final point, looking back to the 1998 final, two Zidane headers from corners against Brazil. Is that an omen in this is what has been the set-piece World Cup?
It wouldn't surprise you. For all their openness in games in this tournament and in all of Mbappe's attacking talent, it was a Samuel Umtiti header that beat Belgium. No, it wouldn't surprise at all. I think it's a very different feel, this final, in that France are heavy favourites. And obviously before the pre-final Ronaldo kind of hoopla, Brazil were clear favourites for that final. So it is a different one. And France, as I say, Euro 2016 didn't deal with the tag of being favourites well at all in their home country. Maybe it'll be different in Russia.
Do you expect France to win?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Dave?
Yeah.
Me too. I tip France before the tournament. They'll come of age on Sunday. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford Tough, Built Ford Proud.